Before we get started with today's show, I want to note, during this time of social isolation with no games to watch, it's not just the right time that's still churning out content for you. ESPN Podcast is adapting to this new normal, and just this week, there have been new episodes of ESPN Daily, The Low Post, The Hoop Collective, Ariel Helwani's MMA Show, The Mina Kimes Show, and That's What She Said with Sarah Spain. You can listen to all of these and more wherever you get your podcasts. What do companies like Ring, Hint, and Tecovas all have in common? They all use NetSuite to accelerate their growth. Successful companies know that in order to grow faster, you must have the right tools. If you want to take your company from 2 million to 10 million or 10 million to hundreds of millions in revenue, NetSuite by Oracle gives you the tools to turbocharge your growth. With NetSuite, you get a full picture of your business, finance, inventory, HR, customers, and more. It's everything you need to grow all in one place. Run your entire business from anywhere, even if you're working from home. With NetSuite, you're covered. NetSuite will give you the visibility and control you need to make the right decisions and grow with confidence. That's why NetSuite customers grow faster than the S&P 500. NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system, trusted by more than 20,000 companies. It's the last system you'll ever need. NetSuite, business grows here. Schedule your free product tour right now and receive your free guide, 6 Ways to Run a More Profitable Business, at netsuite.com/Bomani. That's netsuite.com/Bomani. netsuite.com/Bomani. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we'll tell you about an NCAA tournament boycott that almost happened. Mike Leach out here messing up again. And your stories about sneaking around your house during the time of pandemic. But first. So we just got word in, we're recording this in the morning, we just got word, my man Jeff Passan wrote a story about Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association are trying to get the season started, if possible, in May in Arizona. Here's what the plan would be. The plan would be to get all 30 teams to Arizona, all right? They go put them up in hotels, kind of put them in a bubble, isolate them from there. Have the whole baseball season without fans in Arizona at the various stadiums and spring training sites that they have in Arizona, right? I guess they may have thought about doing that in Florida, but come on now, y'all watch the news, everybody be sick. Anyway, talk about doing this thing here in Arizona. Isolate the players, bring the cameras into the stadium. I'm assuming they have cats out there in masks like Korea right now where they're playing baseball and get this money. I mean, baseball back on track. Now, it's worth noting that this happened after a conference call on Saturday where the heads of a lot of leagues, I want to just call them heads of a lot of leagues because they're stretching the definition of head of major league sports leagues in this. I don't know if you guys saw who all was on this call, but let me pull this up and give you the whole list of all the people who were there. And you'll understand why I'm a little apprehensive about throwing out the idea that it was, you know, the major league people that were there. So it was the commissioner of the NBA, the WNBA, Major League Baseball, the NFL, the NHL, PGA Tour, NASCAR, MLS, UFC, and the WWE. Once Vince McMahon got invited, I'm just like, okay, gotcha. Also, it was interesting that the NCAA was not included in that call. Here's the problem that we got here, all right? And guys, I think it may kind of sort of be a running theme on this podcast today, which is as much as people want me to be as apolitical as possible when we discuss these matters, the truth is it's politics, man. There's no way that you're going to be able to separate this from politics because the question of when we in this country are going to get back on these streets and quote unquote get back to normal is entirely a political one. We have a president who is the incumbent in an election year who is running for office, right? He's running to be the president again. We have that part. We have the inarguable economic consequences of the economy slowing the way that it has, right? We cannot avoid that. We cannot avoid the fact that a non-performing economy never works out well for anybody who is in office, especially not somebody who is in office and trying to keep that office, all right? All those things are at play, and if we're going to discuss this honestly, or if we're going to discuss this in a way that actually makes it worth it for us to take the time to talk about it, then we have to talk about it with those things in mind. So we wind up with a call with the president, and the president, who has made it very clear in everything that he has said, we got to get back out here. We got to get back out here. What's the line that he's been using? That the cure cannot be worse than disease. All of that stuff. What Passan says in his story about what's going on with baseball is that there are public health officials in the administration who apparently are telling the folks that baseball can pull this off, right? That it is, in fact, a possibility that they can do it. The problem is, when you tell me it's public health officials, I need to know a little bit more about who those officials are. I need to know a little bit more about who their influences are. And I need to know a little bit more about whether they are able to offer opinions in public, or at the very least, that work independent of the personal goals of the political figures who are involved in this. Like, to me, that's where we all are in trying to talk about what exactly is going on here. Now, here's the thing to me that I hear about this baseball plan and why it's difficult for me to really get on board with. I have trouble reconciling the idea of having, like, the baseball bubble with what we're all being told about why it is that we need to stay inside. It's not nearly as much about the fact that we need to stay inside to protect ourselves as much as it is that we need to stay inside in order to protect other people, in order to stop the spread of COVID-19. That's why we need to be indoors. All right. The way that I thought that we are all supposed to operate ourselves, and again, you let me know if I'm wrong here, but we all individually need to operate in this way, such as we are basically behaving as though we are asymptomatic carriers of the disease. Because there are so many people who have this virus, who have had this virus at points and don't realize it. Honestly, there are some of us who have had this. Like, I've talked to enough people who talk about having something that they thought was the flu and getting tested, and it wasn't the flu. And when you look back on it, it sounds a lot like COVID-19, right? We've had these people who have it. It is also possible that many of us have had it without having symptoms and simply do not realize it. Okay. It's possible that some of us have it present tense right now and simply do not have symptoms. We need to operate as though we have it and then be protective of other people. So when you start talking about seeing folks out here in these streets with these masks on and stuff like that, the mask does more to stop you from spreading it than it does to protect you from catching it. So if we're all supposed to operate as though we have it and that's the way that we're going to get something done, then how are we asking baseball players to now go be around each other? And the whole idea is like, well, yeah, man, you know, if we just get them together and they'll all be isolated, they'll be together, then we won't have any problems. Bro, you're not going to be able to keep all these people isolated. Are you think you're really going to be able to get these dudes back in the hotel and ain't nobody and like nobody's going to get out? Nobody's going to get around. Nobody's going to do anything. Like, do you really think that that's going to be possible functionally? I find that to be difficult to believe. This to me seems to be a very, very unsafe situation, and it seems to be unsafe for the players. And it seems to be a great way to have a whole bunch of dudes fighting in the hotel. All right. Look, man. This social isolation and everything that we're doing, social distancing. All right. I'm with it. Pretty damn tight myself, right? I've done pretty well with it, but I'm doing it in a place where I'm comfortable. I'm doing it in my house. Like, I don't live with anybody, so I'm not surrounded by loved ones necessarily, but I am in my space with all the things that make me comfortable. And it puts me in a position where dealing with this for me personally has not been that bad. I know where everything is. I know where everybody is. All of that stuff. Got it. You talking about taking these cats, separating them in many cases from their families, and saying for a stretch of months, you're basically going to be sequestered like the OJ jury. Like, yeah, you'll get to read the newspaper and watch TV and stuff like that, but you're going to be hidden away from the world at a time where, quite honestly, your people probably need you. Your folks need to be in your space. Your kids are going to want you to be around. Your wife or whoever your significant other may be, whatever the capacity is that you interact with him or her, that's all going to be there in. And you talk about sending these cats out in the middle of, you know, out to the middle of nowhere. And look, I understand the players have an incentive in this, and the players' incentive in this is get these checks. Like, everybody's got a measure of incentive in this to turn the money up. Everybody's got a reason to get the gears turning again on the dough. I get it all. I just don't see how this is a good idea or how this is going to work out for everybody. I don't even know necessarily if the product that you're going to offer is going to be one worth watching. And I say that just because I think we lose sight of the fact of how much of the television production is about having the audience. There's a reason why sitcoms for decade after decade after decade had a studio audience or a laugh track, right? Like, it adds a little life to things. That's what we're talking about with the people that's not going to be in the stands, is they are part of the production. They are part of the broadcast. And now we're not going to have them. I get that that is something that is better than nothing. I just don't. It ain't worth it to me. I myself don't need it. I don't think we need to do this to put the players at risk. And don't forget about the umpires. Like, Gabe, I don't know if you saw in the passing story where they were talking about one thing they might do with the umpires is they're going to bring in some sort of computerized umpiring so that the umps can be 6 feet away.
Yeah, I read that. I mean, doesn't that kind of jive with the trend of robot umps from the future that people keep talking about?
Well, that's what I was about to say. You think the umpires are going for this? Of you wheeling in their replacements? And see, my thing about the umpires is the umpires are replaceable by these computers, but I think the umpires make the product better. People do not want to just strictly go by having the robots. I don't think so. We like the arguments with the umps. We like the human element of it. Like, getting the calls right is not the only part that matters. So I think that there's something to be said for the idea of having people that actually participate in this, but the umpires are going to have to fight against this. They are not in a position where they can really do their job. So you're going to have somebody else do the job? Nah, bruh. It ain't going to be that. It can't be that. And so I just look at all of this, and I look at everybody trying to make sure that they get the money back on track. You'll notice that the NBA, they say that they won't even be able to entertain this possibility until May 1. Baseball is like, no, we're going to do what we can. We got an idea. We think that we're going to roll this thing out here. You're going to have to shut this whole thing right back down if one person catches it. Now, a level of this that's important also is that baseball believes they can make this work, and basketball, because they're back channeling this a little bit. It hasn't been as clear as anything that's come out with baseball. One thing they say is going to allow them to be able to do this is that they will be able to get rapid testing done. If they believe that they've got something in place that's going to allow them to get tests that'll turn around results, basically boom, like that, and then they'll be able to know if people have this. Do you realize what a bad look it's going to be? And I'm sure, I don't know all the particulars on this, but I am sure that the testing is improving as we're going along with this. But dude, we got people all over this country who are dying before the test results get back. Like, we got people who are taking a test on Monday, dead on Wednesday, got no results till Thursday. So you're going to tell me that you got access to rapid testing, and rather than offer this up to like hospitals, you're going to have this for baseball players so that the owners can make money? How exactly is that going to go over? How? Like, if you wind up there with basketball, like, how is this going to go? Because one thing I did think about, and I thought that, and I want to make an important distinction when we talk about this. When Rudy Gobert got tested, a lot of people got upset because they were like, how is it possible that all these people need tests and can't get it? But now all of a sudden, all these basketball players are getting tested. It made sense for all the basketball players to get tested. And the reason why it made sense for that to happen is those guys interact with so many people that once you found out that one of them was sick, the way that chart was going to go out and all the lines that were going to come out from the center of this diagram was going to go to so many people. And so if this charts out, if this spreads out in that way, then it was important to find out if those guys had it. Got it. But that's not going to be easy to sell if the situation that you're dealing with is one that does not involve the players interacting with fans. right? It's hard to make the argument that this is all about the spread and everything else. That doesn't seem to be the case here. This is just about people getting this bread. And if people are going to be dying like this, then I just don't feel like it's right for those tests to only wind up going to these people. Like, you got to, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but they're talking about in New York using parks for shallow graves so they can figure out what to do with these people because the hospitals are running out of space on what to do with dead bodies. I was walking yesterday and I walked through Central Park and I'm just walking, minding my own business, man. And then I look up and I see the setup that they're getting straight for bringing, I'm assuming people, I don't know if it's for people or bodies, but I'm seeing the space that they're getting set up out here, man. If they're going to be putting people in shallow graves in parks, yo, there's got to be something better that we can do with these tests, man. It's got to be. Like, one thing that's kind of spooky about living in New York is it's always sirens. Like, no matter what time of year it is, no matter what it is, there's always sirens. Like, you're always going to hear that noise because nobody lives far from a hospital, right? Always sirens. But there's normally, like, enough noise outside that you don't think that much about the sirens. Now, man, those sirens ring out. And it doesn't just feel like, hey, it's New York, it could be anything anymore. It doesn't feel like that. Like, you feel like you know why it is that it's going that way. You feel like you know why that ambulance is on the way to where it's going. Like, everything just feels so much clearer and so much more acute in that way. And you talk about getting all the tests you can so you can send them down to Arizona so some people can play some baseball? No, man. I don't know if people need it that bad. And I got to say, man, as much as people talk about this, do you really need regular season baseball? Like, is that going to fix it for you? Who's it going to fix it for? Is that what you need? Like, I could go for the NBA playoffs, but who's this really going to fix it for? It's not going to do that. What this is going to do is get some money in people's pockets. And the tragedy of it all is that this is an apolitical observation about politics. All right. And yes, I always throw out this is an apolitical observation because I need y'all to understand that just because something involves politics is not political in the sense that you're using the term political. But anyway, regardless of what it is, when you start talking about politics, you got to be able to separate whatever the action is or be able to figure out this action and how it connects to the personal interests of the people involved. I forget the name of the drug, the hydro, whatever it is, drug, right? It's the one that has not been proven to be able to cure this virus. But the flip side of it is that people need it for other ailments, one of them being lupus. And the people who need it for their lupus will not necessarily be able to get it because people are willing to roll the dice on this being the cure for the coronavirus. I understand why people might be willing to roll the dice on that. I'm not judging you if you feel like that's the thing to try because you're afraid that you might die from this or suffer some permanent damage. I understand why you might do it, but that's the reason why you got to have responsible people in place who say that this is just the roll of the dice. We don't know if this could harm you, but we know that this will help the people who have lupus. And so we need to keep this stuff in place for the people that we know need it, because you cannot forget that in the midst of this pandemic, all the other stuff that takes people out is still out here. You have to keep that in mind when you talk about all of this, that the rush to get back out here, baseball ain't doing that for America. Baseball is doing that for baseball. And so we have the self-interest of all these people involved and their desire to, like, get out and do this. And everybody wants to get out. Everybody wants to get things going. Everybody's going to want to find a way, but we got to be responsible about this. And I don't know how to tell what is the people who have power in this being responsible and what of this is them being, like, self-interested. Like, Gabe, how you feel about this rapid testing, by the way?
Does this or does this not remind us of our old friend Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos?
Yes, right. Well, here's my question about the testing. How do you test the test?
Yeah, exactly. When it comes to, like, scientific or medical steps forward, usually there's, like, peer-reviewed journals that accompany it in order for it to get out into the marketplace, as we all discussed when that Theranos documentary came out. I mean, that sort of stuff takes time, real time.
I have questions about how good those tests are. I got questions about all of it, man. And I feel like with all of these questions, they are on the fingers crossed, right? Like, I told you the situation with my mom and that cat at the house, right? So a long time ago, I was engaged to somebody And my mother had this cat that she kept at her house. My mother, long story, but my mother works in Huntsville, Alabama, worked there, and parents were living in Atlanta. And so she had this cat that she was keeping in Alabama. And then she would bring it to Atlanta for the weekend to my parents' house. And I called my mom early, right? And I was like, hey, look, you know, my then fiance, she was allergic to cats. And I'm like, hey, she's allergic to cats. I can't bring her to the house during the holidays if you keep bringing the cat. Right? I just can't, right? Like, she physically cannot withstand that. I don't know what to tell you about the cat, but I'm just telling you, I can't do that. Like, that's what it's going to have to be. And she said she understood. She was very disappointed, but she understood. And I'm like, cool. And then I get home for Christmas, and I ask something about the cat. And she's like, yeah, the cat's in the basement. I said, what? Well, I just figured I could just bring the cat and leave the cat in the basement. That don't fix the problem, man. No, that's not the solution. She wanted to keep the cat so bad, right? And so she's looking for any way possible that she can bring the cat. And so she got to the what about zone. Well, what about? Like, yeah, you know. Okay, cool. I'll go ahead and do that. That's what all of this feels like to me, right? It's just people sitting around in a room with a bunch of, well, what about? Well, what about? And as you might imagine, that plan with the cat did not work, right? The dander and stuff still floats to the sky. Still gets up. Still happened. Still had a problem when I brought her to the house. That did not work. Stakes are a little bit higher on this than they were with just an allergy. I just don't feel like this is a good idea, guys. I don't need baseball that bad. And honestly, everybody out here needs to say as loudly as they can, we don't need baseball that bad. And then make them say to us honestly, yeah, but we do. Mike Leach coaches at Mississippi State right now. Now, one thing that has always been key about Mike Leach's head coaching career is that he has become, you know, people like him just kind of quirky because he'll say all this stuff in the Pirates stuff and everything else. But a big part of why he's been able to do this is that he has existed largely in the hinterlands, right? He is at Texas Tech. That's off in the cut. He was at Wazoo. Wazoo might be more often to cut than any Power 5 school. And now he is in another famously off to cut location, Starkville, Mississippi, where he is now the coach at Mississippi State. Now, he is not physically in Starkville, as I understand it. I understand that he is hunkering down through this pandemic in Key West. But that is Mike Leach. I understand why everybody likes Mike Leach, or the people who do like him. I get why they do. I have come to really dislike him over the years. And I've come to really dislike him over the years, really in large part because I don't like the way that he treats his players. I don't like the fact that it's abundantly clear that whenever his team loses a game, he always blames it on the players. And he'll get out there and start talking about their fat little girlfriends and all this other stuff like that. Like, it's a bad look. It's unprofessional. It's wrong. There's no real way around it. It's wrong. But he gives good quotes, and so people then deal with it. And honestly, most of the people that cover his sport only have to deal with him but so much because he's only ever had one very good team. And as a result of only having one very good team, national guys only kind of have to deal with him when it's fun. I don't really know what to make of the situation with him at Texas Tech with Adam James and all of that stuff. Like, it's tough. It's tough. I don't have the great answer for that. You could argue that that was grounds to dislike him, certainly, because it seems that there's evidence that he may have mistreated a player. There's also a reason to be skeptical about whether or not that's exactly what happened. Again, I don't really have the great answer for those things on Leach. And that was before he started sitting up on Twitter and sending memes. I don't really know how he's gotten away with it, to be perfectly honest. But he's just kind of been sitting over there and he fires off some stuff that is less about the politics than it is about the tone, right? It's less about just like the idea that he is to the right than it is the nature of the propaganda that he has a tendency to share, right? You go look it up and find out what all the stuff is. I don't want to get myself out here trying to categorize it. I want you to be able to go look that stuff up and you'll have your own idea about it. But he's done it and it's never really turned into a huge thing. Like one thing he got caught doing, this I can say pretty clearly, is he got caught sending out one of those videos that in a nefarious way was edited to misrepresent something that former President Obama had said. And the people who had typically been the ones to push that stuff were a bit fringy, right? Let's put it like that. Like they were a bit fringy, like toward the outlier end of things, right? And that came up and he kind of like got by on that. So here's what's happened with Mike Leach recently. Mike Leach sent out some meme, and again, I am amazed that a man in his capacity, like, really thinks that he can just be around here sitting out memes, right? Just come on now, the risks are just entirely too high, but he's operated as though nothing can happen to him. So, Leach sent out a meme that was of a woman who was knitting up a noose for her husband, during the quarantine. Right? Like, you know, so the basic idea being, they've been stuck around each other for so long. They're so tired of each other. And now she is knitting up a noose for him. Immediately, people responded to the noose. And for them, it evoked thoughts of lynching. Like that's where they saw it. That's where they saw the picture of this woman knitting up this noose. It made them think of lynching. One of the things that came up immediately when, you know, people brought this up, they made it very specific to Mississippi. And they were like, you really can't joke about nooses in Mississippi. Totally get where people are coming from. I also don't think those people are factually correct. I cannot have a problem with them for how they feel, right? But like when I was a kid, and Gabe, you might be a little young for these commercials, but do you remember any of the old Pace Picante sauce commercials?
You're talking about like salsa, right?
Yes.
Like Pace salsa. I want to say I remember them, but refresh my memory and the listener's memory.
All right. So they had this famous ad campaign where it'd be a bunch of these cowboys and they were sitting around a fire and they were talking about Picante. I forget exactly how the Picante sauce comes up, but one of the guys has his Pace Picante sauce. And he's explaining where the picante sauce comes from. I guess it comes from Texas, you know, somewhere around there, and how it's got all the spices and all the vegetables and all that stuff and everything. And then there's a guy on the other side brings out picante sauce and somebody looks at it and they say, wait a minute, this is made in New York City. And everybody goes, New York City? And one of the guys goes, get a rope. This commercial was on all over the place. Now, I mean, I think it's a bit much to say that you could get killed for bringing substandard picante sauce, but that was, you know, that was the thing. But that obviously was not about, like, that was not about race. You understand what I'm saying? Like, that commercial, I don't recall anybody watching that commercial as it came out to hear somebody say, get a rope. Now, granted, you could see it and it was all white people, but nobody thought that that was about race. Like, I put this meme that Mike Leach put up in the same category as I put that one. I don't think Leach meant anything at all about race or lynching in that sense when he put this meme up of the woman knitting the noose during quarantine. I don't think that's what he meant at all. But I find it wildly ironic that as he has tiptoed by the line on all this other stuff, that this one would be the one to do him in. Now, it's not going to do him in the sense of getting him fired, but I tell you what it has done. Two of his players have already gone into the transfer portal. Keep in mind, again, that while this is going on, Mike Leach is not in Mississippi. Mike Leach is in Florida. His players, I imagine, are by and large in Mississippi. I imagine he's got a significant number of his players who are around or still near campus because that's the place where they can stay. Remember, not everybody can go home during the break, right? Those guys are there and he's down there in Florida and maybe he's down there trying to get on the, get on the machines, try to FaceTime them, get everything right. I don't have a great answer for what exactly he's doing down there or how it is that he's handling it. But the things that he's done that have been kind of questionable, this one I don't want to say it rates low, but I feel like this one rates in a different category. But this is the one that's got his players looking at him funny. And look, man, if you're going to be out here trying to get players to go to Mississippi State, you're going to have to get players, by and large, from Eastern Mississippi, but Northeast Mississippi in particular. You can get some players out of like Northwest Alabama, but you're going to need to get boys from the deep South. You're going to need to get boys from places where they might not see your lynching joke the way that I saw it, right? You're going to need to recruit some boys that seem very similar to these ones who want to leave your program. It's a lot easier for Mike Leach when he was doing this off in the middle of nowhere where the stakes weren't so high. Let's see how long he lasts at this job. The Athletic has a very, very interesting story. They did an interview with Duncan Robinson of the Miami Heat. Gabe, had you heard of Duncan Robinson before he was in the NBA?
I had not.
I had never heard of him at all. And then I was like, well, where'd he go to school, right? And then they said he went to Michigan. I'm like, damn, I'm really slipping, right? Like, I figured I hadn't heard of him because he went to some place I'd never heard of. I ain't realized that the homie, like, went to Michigan. Oh, okay. Should I be ashamed of myself?
It is interesting, though, that a player emerges in the league that had kind of like an underwhelming career at a very big school. It's like far more frequent that a player makes that extra leap after having, you know, already done it at like a small school where right. They just didn't get the credit.
Okay, so he wasn't very good at Michigan. Okay, I feel better now. He averaged 9 points a game last year. Yeah, I feel better. It's not my fault. Okay, all good. Yo, listen to this. He shot 38% from three in college in 2018, and now he's like the best three-point shooter in the league? By the way, this should let y'all all know, it ain't just in the genes. They got to practice three-point shooting, too. You feel me? Say, get that man credit for his hard work. That's all I'm saying. Get a man credit for his hard work. Anyway, he told The Athletic that in 2018, Michigan made the Final Four. There was a plan to boycott open practice. Now, for those of you who don't know about open practice with the NCAA, it's a cool thing as a fan where at every tournament site, the day before the game start, they have open practice. It's free. You can show up and you can watch the teams practice. And what you typically get out of it that's cool for fans is a dunk show, right? That's when you start getting cats throwing it off the glass, doing 360s, like all of that stuff. But you can go check it out when the tournament comes to town. And so it's an especially big deal during Final Four weekend because, duh, it's the Final Four. 70,000 people could get there. More folks are made aware of the fact that open practice is an option. So more people show up. And also for the NCAA, easy way to make some cash, right? People show up. You sell concessions, you know, T-shirts, all of that stuff. Boom, you get people in, make a little bread, all of that. Looks like a real cool event. So the players at Michigan talked about it. And they were going to boycott the open practice. Like that was their plan, was like to let these folks know what the deal was. They were going to boycott the open practice. And as it got closer, they decided not to. And the reason that they decided not to was they needed it to be all the teams, was basically what they were saying. In order for this to like really land, they needed all four teams to do it. They hadn't thought of it soon enough. They didn't have a plan in place. And so since they couldn't execute it, they decided not to do it. Gabe, I am very curious to see how it would have gone over had they done it.
Wonder how different it would have felt if it was, say, just Michigan and not the other Final Four teams.
Yeah, and I also wonder how vulnerable Michigan would have been left if it was just them. Right? Like, if it was just them who did that, what could the NCAA do to them? You know, is there any way, like, I doubt very seriously, like, obviously that they could make them, like, forfeit the games or anything like that. But what could they do? Like, you know, what risk would they be taking if they did it individually? But if they had all done it, it would have been so fascinating. And the reason I say that is, if you decide to boycott the whole game, right? Like, we're not going to play in the game and the other team's not going to play in the game too. That's going to generate a serious backlash. And right or wrong, I understand why it would generate that backlash. And it would be hard to get, like, even people who say they support you. Everybody supports your cause. Don't everybody support your protest? It's not the same thing, right? They can support where you're coming from, but most people out here just trying not to rock the boat. And so that's, you know, that's the way they would look at it. But can't nobody really say anything to you about it if all you're doing is, like, not going to a practice. That's not actually a practice. That's more an exhibition. People couldn't really say anything to you about that if that was what you decided to do. It would be really interesting to see how the media would handle it, to see how the NCAA would handle it. Because ultimately for the NCAA, they don't have a lot of leverage. Like, I actually look back on the idea of Michigan and doing it themselves differently, because I feel like with Michigan, they could have done it. What do you think the NCAA was going to do? Not televise a game? You know what I'm saying? What do you think they're going to say? All right, Michigan, you guys can't come, and we're going to give back those tens and tens of millions of dollars. They weren't going to do that. I get why they didn't. I don't knock them. But I think they had probably a little more leverage in that circumstance than they believed. But there's something funny about this, right? Every time I talk about what the deal is with pro sports, I always say that the players have an increased incentive to get the ball back rolling because they want to make sure that they get their checks. And that the leagues had their incentive to get this going because they want to get the checks going. And with the NCAA, they obviously want to get this thing going to get the checks. But the players don't get checks. And so I look at them. Everything that these cats try to make you do or try to get you back on board with doing, ain't none of it going to make you no money. Ain't none of it going to make you no money. Do not put yourself in danger for free. They trying to put you in danger for money. Do not put yourself in danger for free. You ain't got to do that. You don't. And you really do have leverage right now because they're the ones who have everything to lose. You got to stay healthy.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, so this first story comes from music.
Professor Mark Anthony Neal, James V. Duke Professor of African and African American Studies at Duke University, writing for National Public Radio. There's a song buried on the second side of the Bill Withers album, Making Music. Paint Your Pretty Picture is easy to overlook alongside some of the hits, modern standards really, that Withers wrote and performed like Lean On Me, Ain't No Sunshine, Grandma's Hands, and Lovely Day. Yet Paint Your Pretty Picture, from its opening line, I will lay around sometimes and show some sadness for people who I've known that are now gone, said so much about an artist who was more concerned about telling stories, the stories about the loves and losses that he witnessed in a world that needed hope, and as someone who understood humanity's pain. Bill Withers wrote songs for people, often black folks, who weren't so enamored with transcending the pain in their lives as they were just finding a moment or two to live through the pain. Bill Withers' music gave folk the license to own their pain and thus own the joy that came with the dawn.
My man Mark, man, I know Mark damn near 20 years now. Good to hear from him. I wanted this topic in the show for, I mean, I don't know, there's no like smooth way to go about doing this. If you know me, you know I love Bill Withers' music. It is a Jones family staple. On our road trips, the tape that we played, and like when you get to the home stretch of the road, so like we put in Bill Withers live from Carnegie Hall on the tape, and you knew that we were hitting the home stretch when we got to Harlem, right? When Harlem comes on at that disc, that Harlem Cold Baloney, that's like 11, 13 minutes, something like that at the end of it. That's how you knew that we were getting to the home stretch. Like, that means something. Like, I got to college and I was putting people on to Bill Withers. You got a whole lot of people who can tell you that I'm the person who put them on to Bill Withers. All right. So in 2009, he put out this documentary called Still Bill. It's clearly produced by him. Like, he clearly has a hand in it. And it's really a story of a simple man from West Virginia who went to the Navy. And then he moved to Los Angeles and was working in a factory, wound up getting on as a singer in his 30s, right? Like, he makes his debut at like age 32 and writes these simple songs. And he's totally not a music industry figure, like not even a little bit. No industry in him whatsoever. Like, the songs he's doing, the intros are too long, at least according to what the standards are. Like, Use Me, for example, that it's a long intro for the era when it came out. And they were hitting them with the, like, yo, you know, song intro can't be that long. He's like, well, this song's intro is long. Like, it's a whole lot of stories like that. And then how basically abruptly in 1985, he looked around the music industry and was like, now I don't want to do this no more. And he just walked away. And they talk about his albums, and his first three albums of his career are an interesting run. The first one is Just As I Am, which is an incredible piece of work. Second one is Still Bill. Very good. Not as good as the first one. The third one is the masterpiece, and it's called Adjustments. And it is, to me, like the best breakup record that anybody has ever made. It is the record that you guys swear that Marvin Gaye's Here, My Dear is. Marvin Gaye's Here, My Dear is a petty, lowbrow attempt at inflicting pain upon his ex-wife, right? And you know the story of the divorce settlement and everything else. If you don't, you can look it up. But you go back and listen to that music, and people are like, yo, that's, you know, so heartfelt, the man in pain or whatever. I find it to be weak, right? I find it to be weak. I find it to be childish. I find it in many ways to be, like, disrespectful. And all of these things, keeping in mind that this woman had to be married to Marvin Gaye. Anyway, Adjustments I found to be like much more sincere, a much purer expression of the feelings and things that he was going through at the time. It ain't always pretty. It ain't always fair. It's not really much blame as much as it is a lot of coping, right? It's a wonderful piece of work. But here's the thing. That record comes out as his divorce from Denise Nicholas is being finalized. Denise Nicholas, Room 222, very famous actress. It has been widely believed for almost 50 years that Bill Withers beat the hell out of that woman. There's a story in 1972 that she was in Tucson filming something. This is before they got married. That she was in Tucson filming something and over the phone tried to end her relationship with Bill Withers. And that Bill Withers jumped in the car from Los Angeles, showed up at her hotel room and beat her. She called the cops, but did not want to press charges. In that 2009 Still Bill documentary, Denise Nicholas does not exist. Withers famously, last 50 years of his life, never talked about her. In the documentary, he's got his new family, he's got his kids, all these things, right? It all looks fantastic. We're all skipping over this thing. And this is a thing that people of the day were very, very familiar with. And to be honest, that honestly, up until only like 5-6 years ago, we treated these things much differently. But we just act like it's not there. And I bring this up not to like, slander is a slang term. I was about to say not to slander Withers in death, because this is a slander, right? Like, obviously what I'm telling you is what it is. But I bring this up to say, for the life of me, I don't really understand how y'all decide when these things do and do not matter. Like, I don't. Like, so many people that I've seen who righteously and rightly and understandably mention these things about other people and just demand like some measure of accountability from folks are the ones that are sending out all the rest in peace Bill Withers as tough as they can and not saying a single word. It's the same thing I say about Miles Davis, where I can turn on Netflix and a Miles Davis documentary is right there on my first page. Miles Davis beat, unrepentantly, by the way, beat the hell out of Cicely Tyson, and y'all say y'all love her. And so I'm not telling you how you should or should not act necessarily. What I can tell you, though, and for a lot of you, is everybody's out here making exceptions on these things in one way or another. And when we come across someone for whom we think an exception should not be made, but others do make that exception, we have a tendency to get on a high horse about it. I'm just saying that in these matters, it might be worth it just to kind of look at yourself every now and then and just be like, yo, so how exactly am I doing this, right? Like, how am I going about this? Because I love Bill Withers' music. But this is there. I've always, by the way, you can go look up on my website and everything else. I've always talked about these things as they related to him. But a lot of people are acting like this wasn't a thing, and they know damn well it was. And I'm just curious as to why.
All right, this second story also comes from music.
My name is Zoe Madonna, and I write about music for the Boston Globe. So it's official. everything is moving onto Zoom. Your Pilates class, your 11 o'clock meeting, your cousin's wedding, your kid's second grade story time. But some things are trickier to migrate online than others. Music teachers who want to keep teaching have had to not only learn the ins and outs of this piece of software that most of us had never heard of a few weeks ago, they've had to come up with creative solutions to keep the music going while we're all trying not to breathe on anybody who doesn't live with us. So private lessons are the most straightforward. Though one voice teacher has found that Zoom interprets vocal exercises as ambient noise and filters them out. But trying to sing or play instruments together is pretty much a recipe for disaster. It's laggy, and people's internet connections are already slowed down because the networks are choked. But they're still finding ways. I talked to the director of a community chorus that's still rehearsing. Everyone but the pianist is on mute, but the singers can still practice their parts individually, and just as importantly, they can see their fellow singers' faces. Many of these singers are retired and of an age where they're more vulnerable to COVID-19, and whether their June concert is going to happen is anyone's guess. But for now, they're rehearsing like it is. And it doesn't stop there. Dave Cortez and Xia Peng Liu, a married couple, started a whole online music school out of their living room. And they offer everything from baby and toddler classes to a kid's songwriting group and an advanced improv class. And because it's all online, anyone, not just Boston locals, can participate. And though bringing students a few moments of joy and togetherness in the middle of this crisis is important, it's also vital to mention that online lessons help teachers make up for the chunk of cash that they lost because all their gigs are canceled.
Yo, that sounds tricky, man. I imagine the music teachers were definitely coming up with all the, well, whatabouts. Because, like, we don't have to sit 6 feet within 6 feet of each other in order to do this, right? You know? Right? I can teach you piano from across the room, right? Right? Can I? We can just sit outside and play guitar, right? Right? Like, yo, I need this money. You imagine how restless those kids are? Like, that's my thing. Can you imagine just how restless they are as they try to get this all done? Now, I don't want to act like I'm like gawking at this, but it is interesting just to hear kind of the different ways that people are having to figure out how to keep the money coming in. Like, just things I had not thought about is that, yes, if you are a music instructor, what in the world are you supposed to do? Like, not even if that's your primary job. What if that's just what you do for side money, right? But that side money matters.
Yeah, 100%. One interesting layer to it as well is that the music teacher really has the higher ground in terms of forcing you to practice when the little kids don't want to practice.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, have you been, you know, Johnny, have you been practicing your sheets? And it's like, well, it's like, what have you been doing?
Right.
You don't have anything. You don't have anywhere to go. You don't have anywhere to be. You can't go outside.
Yeah. Let me tell you this. I blame that. You get extra time to blame the parents in that case. Y'all just wasting your money. You better make that boy learn. Look, times like these are when Mozarts are made.
All right. This last one comes from Tech.
My name is Aaron Garst. I'm a freelance reporter for a number of sites like The Washington Post, Wired, and The Verge. I mostly write about video games and esports. This story is about how Animal Crossing, a game where you hang out in a small village, has been a way for people to get together with family and live out major life events that they've had to cancel due to the pandemic. A couple hosted their wedding, a guy had friends over for a birthday party, a different couple in a long-distance relationship held a date, all within the game. The game lets them customize wedding dresses, give each other gifts, other things that are appropriate for birthdays and weddings. For those not familiar, Animal Crossing is a simple game where you help build a town up by fishing, catching bugs, and other tasks like that. It's great for casual online multiplayer with friends. It's been around since the early 2000s. Animal Crossing New Horizons is the latest entry on Nintendo Switch. It came out, as many people told me, at the perfect time for stuff like this to happen.
Gabe, I'm just not that good at imagining.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, you've talked about before how if people, you know, have their weddings delayed or weddings canceled because of this, it's just too bad because, you know, there's so much else going on. But it's a whole nother level to think, I'm not going to reschedule this. We can't wait.
Like, do you count as a witness? Right? Right? Like I saw it on the video game.
I'd be interested to know how much is like customizable because you have like people who are trying to, you know, do destination weddings, people who are, you know, oh, I don't want to have a regular catering service. I want to do a food truck. Who's the ring bearer bringing the little ring up the aisle? Can you use your little dog to do that?
Right. Oh, man. Hey, man, people going to figure this out, man. Again, I can't knock people for doing whatever it is that they got to do. I'm just not that good at imagining. I feel like with marriage, I mean, We had a woman on last week talking about it. Like, this is an interesting trial run to have. This is the honeymoon. Is it too much honey or too much moon?
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. So when we were having our voicemail discussion last week and an idea for a segment came up during that, would you mind sharing the idea was?
Yeah, man. Like, you know how you got to go home for Christmas or you got to go home for summer or whatever it is. You got certain things in your life that you had grown accustomed to doing, but now you're at your parents' house. And so you can't really do them with like the impunity that you used to. So now you got to like sneak around the house. But sometimes you do that sneaking and like, you know, your pops is sneaking around. Maybe your mom sneaking around doing the same things. Maybe y'all stumble across each other, or maybe you just went through extraordinary lengths just to try to like sneak around and do things while you're at the house. Cause nothing to have you on some, I'm never going to do that again. And then you do it like spending a week at your parents' house.
And interestingly enough, people have a different idea of what they would be sneaking around to do. It's different with each one of our guests that joined us via voicemail. First comes from Bailey.
About 2 years ago, my mother and I were living with my grandmother. I was a college student at the time. And like most college students, I like to alter my mindset at the end of a long day. So it's about 11 o'clock at night. I go outside. I do my thing. I come back in, and I'm surprised my grandmother's awake. Now, I have no idea to this day why she went out that door not a minute after I came back inside, but she came back in like 30 seconds later and says, "There's a skunk out there." Now, I have to play along with it and say, "Oh, that's not good. We better be careful when we let the dogs out for going outside or anything." Now, this woman has been sprayed by a skunk in her past, and she's got a little bit of a phobia about it. This woman would not leave the house for a week. We had to go to the grocery store. We had to go to the bank for her. We were doing everything for this woman. And I couldn't tell her the real reason why, because in her mind, I'm her perfect grandson. There's no way I'd be doing something like that. So eventually, to get her out of the house, down the road, there was a little bit of roadkill. A skunk was on the side of the road. I stopped my car, and I take a picture from about 20 feet away, and I show her. And only then did she decide to go back outside and to risk getting sprayed by skunks again.
Oh man, that made the pandemic a lot better. She has a skunk phobia. Oh man, that's hilarious.
All right, this next one comes from James in Pennsylvania.
My son's working my last nerve, bro. He's messing up the flow. Me and the wife, he's 4 for 4 for messing up Bible study. You know what I mean? We try to sneak away and have our little Bible study. Every time we knee deep in the Song of Solomon, here come my man. Right at the handle. Clack, 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 clack. I'm hungry. I miss you. Right. Oh, man. Don't kill me. Don't mess my flow up with that sweet little voice. And once the mommy flag goes up, game over. So I'm trying to figure out how to do this. Bo, Gabe, I got Nintendo games on deck. I got Legos that I hid in the basement. So I'm just trying to be proactive. So next time the wife and I are on that Bible study tip, I'm bringing out the Nintendo game. I've got Splatoon, got Pokemon. Trying to think ahead, man. If we can just get a half hour of Bible study in, I'm going to be a happy man.
My man said we deep in the Song of Solomon. I'm hungry. I mean, does he ever sleep?
Kids are always doing that at the most inconvenient times, are they not? Never sleeping when they're supposed to.
Yeah, I guess not. Oh, man. He's like, dog, I'm done.
All right, our last one comes from Tehran in Coatesville.
So these last couple weeks, they've been really crazy. First off, my in-laws showed up at my house about 2.5 weeks ago at like 9 o'clock on a Saturday. Get a knock at the door. I'm like, who's knocking on my door? And I open the door. I see it's my wife's grandmother. Next thing you know, my wife's mom is coming up the steps with a whole bunch of groceries and suitcases. I'm like, yo, what's going on? They scared of the Rona. They scared they wanted somewhere to stay. So now I'm like, trying to piece everything together, trying to figure it all out. I have no idea what's going on. Next thing you know, we all sit down, have a talk. They just showed up because they were scared, and they're from Jersey, so they took a two-hour drive up to Coastville, PA, to come stay with us. Now, I'm frustrated because I'm like, Jersey got real high numbers, but, you know, as long as they're safe, it is what it is. I've been trying to get through it. Meanwhile, me and my wife, we haven't been able to relieve some stress, if you know what I mean, in more than one ways. And, you know, between them being in the house, having to take care of a two-year-old, it's stressful. And luckily, I get, I say luckily, but I'm an essential worker. I go to work every day still. I'm still out working. So I do get some peace at least being at work, which is strange to say. But when I come home, it's just hectic. And my wife can tell, she see what's going on. And, you know, my wife never really does this too much, but I want to say it was Friday. She was like, it walked me to the mailbox real quick, because the way our community set up, you got to go to the mailbox at the end of the driveway. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So we go sit in the car. She closed the doors. Next thing you know, she pull out a purse. I'm like, what are you doing? Pull out a lighter. I'm like, oh, all right. And next thing you know, I never felt so good in my life. And, you know, we had a nice little talk in the car for a little bit. And we went back in the house like nothing happened. Got in the shower and went to bed.
Hey. I'm going to tell it like this. And I ain't married. I ain't been married. So I don't want to speak to you, you know, like. But if y'all just going to show up at my house, I ain't. No. I understand. Sorry. We ain't going to the mailbox. If y'all got a problem with it, y'all can go back to New Jersey. You catch that Rona, you can catch that contact. Pick one.
And when you're deep in the Songs of Solomon.
Yeah. Look, all I'm saying, all of this, if anybody who show up at your house, if they don't like it, they can go, right? You ain't got to kick them out, but they got some decisions to make. This is going to be going on for too long, right? Whole lot of people going to break on a lot of this stuff, right? It's just like, yo, I ain't going outside, right? But like for people who are on top of each other in this time, where social distancing actually comes from leaving, but ladies and gentlemen, I thank you so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to NetSuite. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Mark Anthony Neal, professor at Duke. Check out his story on NPR about Bill Withers. Rest in peace to Bill Withers. Also, thanks to Zoe Madonna. Check out her story at the Boston Globe on people trying to teach music classes in the age of the pandemic. And thanks to Aaron Garst, a contributor to the Washington Post. Check out his story about how people are living their lives on Animal Crossing. And remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.